This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
In the world of clinical research and drug development, information is king. Patient information, clinical information, regulatory information, safety information. All these and other types of information are essential building blocks of therapeutic product development. But today, real world and other types of data are changing the nature of evidence in clinical research. Have the ways we manage these data and the information they represent kept up with these changes? I am Tamia Elliott, Manager of Scientific Programs for DIA Americas. Today, we are joined by two experts to discuss these important topics. Dr. Venkatraman Balasubramanian, or Bala, who serves as Senior Vice President of Life Sciences for Orion Business Innovation, and Mr. Patterson Schaefer, who serves as Managing Director of Regulatory Compliance and Quality for Grant Thornton LLP. Bala and Pat are both members of the DIA Working Group developing the Regulatory Information Management Reference Model that will be discussed in a special session at DIA's 2020 Regulatory Submissions, Information, and Document Management Forum. Our first question is for you, Bala. So much regulatory information is needed to develop and manage biopharmaceutical products throughout their life cycle. So let's start by discussing the term Regulatory Information Management, or REM. How do experts in the field, like yourselves, define REM?
Regulatory information management comprises of a number of different things, which includes data, metadata, information, and documents that are either produced by regulatory or consumed by regulatory from other functional areas. So this typically includes submission planning, product registration and lifecycle management, health authority questions and correspondence and commitments, CMC change control, regulatory intelligence, labeling. Having said that, if you look at the GENS survey, they define close to about 18 capabilities as being part of REM, which means REM is actually characterized by a great degree of cross-functional dependencies and data ownership and data governance. And also data gets collected and curated over a period of time. It's not a single point in time. So data has to be pristine. It has to be collected, managed in a highly regulated way so that it's useful for making decisions and also improving efficiencies across the value chain. Due to different philosophies and perspectives, many solution frameworks and solutions have developed organically over the years. But that's also the problem. That's causing a lot of confusion. People do not have a common nomenclature, common vocabularies on what REM means. And the lack of standardization is actually causing a lot more confusion. And this is exactly why the REM working group was created, to address some of the common nomenclature requirements for the industry, both from a process and an information model perspective.
And that's great. I think there is a lot of power in forming working groups to solve problems and innovate solutions. So I commend you both and others involved in pushing forth our industry towards harmonization. Where and how did the REM Working Group see the need to develop a framework for REM?
I believe the REM Working Group was started about 4 years ago at one of the RSIDM conferences, similar to the one which we're having soon. In fact, I was in the audience, and I think one of the participants, Sheila Mahoney, and she's one of the working group members, she raised this question on how about forming a REM working group similar to the TMF reference model. So there was a lot of discussion around that. And if people remember 10 years ago, TMF was a very unstructured mess. And now, thanks to the TMF reference model, the entire industry is kind of working towards a standard and working towards meeting these definitions as per the TMF reference model, either from a product offering perspective or even within organizations to understand the entire process of TMF. So we believe a similar approach is required. And a lot of what we're doing is taken from the TMF playbook.
It's nice to hear stories like that, because you all went from a moment of inspiration to implementation, and to see what you all have created from that moment is very inspirational. So my other question for you, Bala, is you all have defined an ideal state of REM. What is it, and why is it important to articulate this definition at this time?
I would say we're still in the process of defining what an ideal state of REM is, but the fundamental first steps are to define what are the overarching core data elements or the information model that is required by sponsors, by health authorities, you know, by partners and a number of stakeholders in order to manage regulatory information across the value chain. So the fundamental goal is to define some common vocabularies, common standards, both from a process point of view as well as from an information point of view. So everybody is working off of the same music sheet. So that's the goal. The idea is to make sure that processes, software, services, and data are addressing the needs of the end users and the business in order to make better business decisions, in order to improve efficiencies, and in order to make things work not only for regulatory, but also other functions that are depending on regulatory, either consuming data from regulatory or even contributing to regulatory. That's the bottom line. The ideal state would be to leverage regulatory data as a corporate asset. I think the industry is slowly recognizing that that should be the case going forward, so they all can make, you know, better decisions from a product management perspective. Ultimately, RIM should enable better decision-making, increase efficiencies, and contribute to the organization's revenue generation and pipeline. So right now, if you can simply get to the point that submissions can be done faster, that is a huge win. We are still far away from the ideal state, but that's the intent of this working group, to make sure that we are slowly getting there.
And this is a question for both you, Bala and Pat. Do you both see the industry getting to a point of submissions being done faster?
Absolutely.
Yes, I believe so. The realization has set in that regulatory in general, if you look at it across the industry, people are changing regulatory affairs to regulatory science. So it's going to be data driven. So the idea is to make things faster. And in fact, it's also becoming data centric, not document centric anymore. If you look at some of the standards that are coming up, IDMP and others, everything is going towards data. So definitely, we believe these attempts are going to make things a lot faster for the industry.
And my next question is for you, Pat. What challenges currently facing drug development regulatory professionals will this RIM framework meet?
So the challenges are really many. There's cost of poor quality, rework, delays, not having the right information to create a fit for purpose submission. Just the complexity across the global ecosystem is such that it's very difficult to get it right. Given the holistic RIM definition that Bala just gave, regulatory is going to be addressing these challenges across the whole product life cycle. So we start very early on with regulatory intelligence, understanding not only the requirements, but also the expectations of health authority in terms of product design and submission design. Right from the start, RIM will be able to support that. With the data that Bala was talking about, regulatory teams will be able to better advise portfolio teams on probability of regulatory success in any given market. So you're going to have higher success rates from a regulatory perspective going forward. RIM will support that. We talked about getting products to market faster, using the metadata within a RIM system to understand what teams are most effective in developing submissions and what therapeutic areas, what approaches and strategies for submission in different markets. That data is all in the RIM system, so being able to leverage that and get products to market faster is going to be a tremendous benefit. We had one client we were working with where by cutting their submission time from data lock point to submission in half, might realize a net present value of upwards of $800 million. So this has a profound impact on profitability and, of course, getting very valuable therapies to patients faster. Improving efficiencies, less cost, less waste, and then ultimately post-marketing approval, optimizing the life cycle, doing renewals properly, beating the manufacturing change agenda, just keeping products registered in a compliant way. These are all benefits that RIM can address.
Pat, where can we already see the impact of advanced technology on RIM, and where can we anticipate its impact growing in the future?
So what do we mean by advanced technology? First of all, implementing RIM effectively and taking advantage of all the core capabilities within the vendor's solutions is a big win. And frankly, the industry is very slow in truly capitalizing on the basic technology. By that, I mean registration management, correspondence management, these types of things within the systems. There's plenty of opportunity for improvement there. But we do see some companies starting to go beyond that, starting to use machine learning and artificial intelligence to improve planning and forecasting by applying analytics to the metadata, as we spoke about earlier. Other folks that we're working with are using artificial intelligence to review regulatory correspondence and really extract the health authority expectations from meeting minutes, from conditions of approval and approval letters, from pure Q&A and RTQ. So there's a great potential to leverage analytics and artificial intelligence to mine that information. What I will say is that progress is very slow, but because people have to get RIM right before they can go too far with the advanced automation. But as RIM matures and companies fully adopt those basic systems, then there'll be more money set aside for investment, particularly as regulatory is demonstrating some success in achieving the goals of the basic RIM solutions.
And why do you think there's little progress?
So historically, I think that regulatory has been considered sort of a roadblock or a constraint. They're on critical path to access to therapies and to revenue. As regulatory is able to harness the value of RIM and start to demonstrate success in getting these products more reliably and more quickly to market, I think that there'll be much more appetite to invest in enhancing that success.
There was mentioned earlier that an ideal state of RIM would be to leverage regulatory data as a corporate asset. Is it important to consider how to quantify its value?
Yes, I believe any investment should demonstrate return on investment, and regulatory is no exception. So how can we measure return on investment as a corporate asset? And really, it's speed to market. I mentioned that net present value of reducing the time by 50% from data lock to submission can have tremendous value. Measure that and make sure you communicate it, and the investments will continue to flow. Better planning and forecasting, more effective global registration strategies coming out of RIM is another example of value. And then just at a very basic level, you know, one client that I had worked with in the past had been quantifying their cost of poor quality. They had been spending greater than $150 million annually in label-related recalls. Simply not being able to achieve right product, right country has a tremendous impact on the bottom line. So doing regulatory right will both deliver top line and bottom line value, frankly.
The basic thing I've seen across different companies, if they don't know where they've registered a product, they're in deep trouble. It's more than revenues. If there's a recall, if there's a quality issue or a safety issue, if there's a recall, if they don't know where they have registered, then they're in trouble from a compliance perspective, right?
And that happens. It's not like it, no, it doesn't happen.
And I remember in my previous life, we did a project that was only 7 data elements that we had to collect from across the globe, almost 150 different countries and thousands of different variations of products and 7 data elements. What's the name of the product? What's the brand name? What's the dosage form strength? Where is it approved? What's the marketing status? That's all. But it was such a nightmare to get that information.
What else would you like our listeners to know about regulatory information management and the RIM framework? And Bala, we'll start with you.
There are a number of initiatives that are being supported by the RIM working group. One is the white paper, which we initiated in 2019. There's another version of that. It's already out. In parallel, we're working on the RIM reference model itself, and we have defined some of the generic RIM processes and the information model itself. So we definitely are looking for industry to participate in it and provide the insights based on their own needs and experiences so we can further advance the model. We encourage everyone to be part of this group. We're looking forward to making this as a true reference model in the next few years, and we'll be releasing the first version of it in the summer timeframe.
Great. And Pat, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yes, briefly. RIM has been growing in terms of its scope over the last several years. Starting, you know, maybe 10 years ago, it was basically registration management. And then, as Bala was saying, the capabilities that are considered part of RIM has grown and grown as well. The working group is also creating a next generation white paper. So our first generation white paper covered many of those basic capability areas that were part of RIM originally, but our new one is looking very much at labeling. We're looking at regulatory intelligence as a capability with real value. And then finally, focusing on the intersections RIM has with other functional areas. So intersection with clinical in terms of bringing clinical information into the regulatory environment to support more efficient submissions. We're looking at interfaces with manufacturing to improve right product, right country, product release, and those types of things. So I reiterate what Bala was just saying, we would love greater participation. We do have good participation. What we're doing now represents a good collaboration across industry participants, but the more the merrier, I would say.
Well, those are all of our questions for today. And thank you both Bala and Pat for joining us. For DIA, I am Tommy A. Elliott.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.